Monday morning you sure look fine. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another episode of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. We're going to have another quick off-season NFL update kind of show for you today on Monday Morning Huddle. Not a ton going on in the NFL. Like we said 2 weeks ago, kind of the dead period of the NFL calendar year, which it really has become a calendar year. But not a whole lot going on. We're going to talk about Colin Kaepernick's big new contract, but is that a myth? Kind of, right away it looked like a huge contract. Reports saying it was $126 million, 61 guaranteed over six seasons. We're going to get into it and really dissect the contract, and I'll explain why it's not quite as lucrative as you might think and actually really favors the San Francisco 49ers. In our second segment, we're going to discuss two articles that are currently up on the Football Nation website. Three teams that should do a quarterback switcheroo in OTAs or training camp. I will discuss the one team that I kind of disagree with, that I will disagree with, and say they shouldn't do a QB switcheroo. And the other article we'll discuss, five coaches with something to prove this season. Again, I won't reveal all five coaches, but I will talk about the one that I'm going to pump the brakes on and say doesn't have a whole lot to prove, although he does need to have a good season, missing the playoffs in the last few years. Then we'll do our third and long segment talking about Tom Brady. A lot of discussion. Is he a top five quarterback anymore? Talk about that. NFL draft likely leaving New York City. We'll mention the other locations it could go to and if that's a good thing for the NFL. And last week, the NFL came out and said that their logo for Super Bowl 50 will not include the Roman numeral L. They are going to do the traditional, I guess it's Arabic numbers, the numbers that you and I know and use in math class in elementary school all the way up through college, and the 5-0 Super Bowl 50 that way, not the Roman numeral L. So we'll talk about that as well. But first, Colin Kaepernick and his contract, like I said, $126 million, $61 million guaranteed. That's not really the case. That $61 million could be guaranteed. Technically, that is true. And I'm getting all of this. There's a lot of places that you can go that explain this contract. To be honest, I find the terms of the agreement pretty complicated. So probably depending on how you like your contracts or things explained, that would determine what preference you have to what organization or what site to explain the contract to you. But I'm using Pro Football Talk on NBCSports.com. ESPN also had a story on it, which I thought was pretty well explained. And Roto World also has all of the contract parts of the contract explained as well. But I'm using Pro Football Talk. $61 million guaranteed contains plenty of fluff, to use their language. Actually, it's really only $13.073 million guaranteed at the point where he signed the contract. This year, $12.328 million is his signing bonus, a base salary of $645,000 and an extra $100,000 for a workout bonus. For the following years, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, the base salaries are only guaranteed if he's injured. And on April 1st of every year, that is when the contract becomes guaranteed. But basically, after this season, every single year of this contract, before April 1st, the 49ers can release Colin Kaepernick, get out of this contract, and pay very little against the salary cap, which is why I said at the top of the show, this is a huge advantage to the team, San Francisco, because they can get out of this big contract at any point. if Colin Kaepernick's play decreases, if it deteriorates, they don't have to pay him this $61 million in guarantees and $126 million. They can get out of it at any point as long as it's before April 1st and as long as he's not injured. So it, base salaries for 2015 is $12.4 million, and then it continues, this article I'm looking at continues to go on. In 2016, 2017, 2018, it does go up, but again, at any point, the San Francisco 49ers can get out of this contract. The other big part of this deal, it's kind of a catch, is the total payout potentially de-escalates by $2 million every year, with up to $12 million potentially going away. Colin Kaepernick can halt that de-escalation by taking 80% of his team's snaps in any given year and taking the 49ers to the Super Bowl or being named first team or second team All-Pro. So as you're probably getting by me explaining this, it's an incentive contract, huge incentives. And ESPN's article that that was written, actually, I believe it was last night or Sunday, this could be the way contracts in the NFL start to go, with huge incentives. You know, these players, if they play up to their potential, if Kaepernick does take the 49ers to the Super Bowl, if he does make first team or second team All-Pro, in the 49ers' mind, in his agent's mind, and in Kaepernick's mind, he deserves the $126 million, 61 guarantee. But he's only going to get that if he plays at that potential and ends up deserving that potential. This is not a contract like maybe Drew Brees or Peyton Manning, which you could argue they did earn the money that they were guaranteed at the point of the signing, although maybe not in Peyton Manning's case when he signed that huge contract with the Indianapolis Colts and then ended up getting released. That was probably a special situation because of his neck surgery. But this could be the way the NFL and NFL teams start going with contracts, having these kind of loopholes and incentive bases, huge incentive bases, where players will get paid huge sums of money if they end up going to Super Bowls and making All-Pro teams. So in many ways, it's a win-win for both sides. We're going to take our first break here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle, but we'll come back referencing two articles up on the Football Nation site. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, I want to hear what you think about the show. Tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. You could also email me, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. And if you're on Facebook, find me on there. Search Dave's Football News. We're going to get into discussing two articles, the top two articles right now as of Monday morning on the Football Nation site. First, three teams that should make the switch at QB during training camp. I'm not going to give away the three teams because I want you to check out the article, but I'm going to talk about one and explain why I disagree. His number one team that should make a quarterback change this year before the season starts, the Cincinnati Bengals. This was a topic that I actually discussed with Chad Johnson at the end of last year when we had him on as a guest after the Bengals lost to the San Diego Chargers in the postseason last year. Look, I get Andy Dalton has lost 3 years in a row, in the first round of the playoffs. Last year, Bengals finally won a division and lost a home playoff game. Arguably, they should have won at least two of those games. Potentially, at least this past year, they played very poorly against a Charger team that played very well at the end of the year and played well in January. That being said, come on. I mean, Dalton, before last year, the Bengals had never been in the playoffs three straight years, ever, in franchise history. Starting in 1970, they've never been in the playoffs 3 years in a row. So to bench the quarterback that took you there, obviously they have a lot of good players in other positions, and Dalton doesn't have to do a whole lot. Why he hasn't been able to play well in the playoffs, or why hasn't the team been able to play well in January, I'm really not sure. But that doesn't mean that they should go to an A.J. McCarron, a guy that was no team took before the fifth round. I think McCarron is an interesting NFL quarterback prospect. If you've followed my draft show of Monday Morning Huddle, or if you listen to Tom Pollen and I, another contributor on Football Nation, our show, I-80 Sports Talk, every Wednesday and Friday evenings on MTR Radio, if you were listening to our shows around the NFL draft, oh, him and I both liked McCarron. Do I like him this year over Andy Dalton? I gotta say no. Unless Dalton plays very badly, and I mean very badly, where the Bengals start the season 0-3 and it's the rest of the team is playing at a high level and the quarterback is not, that is the only situation where I would see a switch under center. The other switch would probably be if there's an injury, if Dalton is injured. That's the only other time I would say McCarron is going to get some time, at least in his rookie year. I am not ready to rule out Andy Dalton just yet. Three straight playoff appearances. Yes, he needs to get some success in January, but the guy has proven to be, if surrounded with the right pieces, I'm not going to go far out there and say Dalton is the next Aaron Rodgers or the next Ben Roethlisberger or Philip Rivers. And by no means am I saying is he the next Tom Brady. But Dalton has proven that he can win in this league. He should be given more time to prove he can win in January. Again, that article is by Patrick Barber. It's very well written. He has two other quarterbacks that I actually agree with, that are two other teams that I agree with that they should switch their starting quarterback this year. So check out his article. The other article I want to talk about today, 2014 NFL, five head coaches with something to prove this season. He lists five coaches for the most part. Yes, I agree with four of his five should or do have something to prove this year. Doesn't mean that I think if they don't prove something, they'll get fired. It's not an article that says these guys are on the chopping block or on the hot seat, but these five coaches do have something to prove. Four of them I agree with. Number three on his list I want to talk about because I don't agree with that one, Tom Coughlin of the New York Giants. Look, you win two Super Bowls and you still have something to prove? What does he have to prove? Two Super Bowl championships. How many other head coaches in the NFL can say that? Not many. Not many at all. The Giants are coming off two subpar seasons and not making the playoffs a third year on a team that went to the Super Bowl and beat the New England Patriots in 2011, February of 2012. Yes, it would be a huge disappointment again if the Giants don't make the playoffs. But does that mean Coughlin has something to prove? Maybe it's just my interpretation of that saying, something to prove. You know, every coach has something to prove when you really think about it. Every player has something to prove. But for me, does Coughlin have something to prove to me as a fan, as a lover, as an analyst of the NFL? If you can call me an analyst. No, I don't think Tom Coughlin has something to prove this year. Two-time Super Bowl winning coach, has had a lot of success in the NFL. He's towards the end of his career. Ryan Houston wrote this article. It's well argued. I agree with four of the five. I just don't think Tom Coughlin belongs on this list. That's all we got for segment number two. We're moving along really quickly on the show. Here's another song from Kesha, changing it up a little bit from the normal classic rock we have on the show. But after this song, we'll be back with our Fourth and Long segment. And we're back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle, your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, tweet at me, DMHOLCOMB. Send me a message on Facebook, Dave's Football News, or email holcombmdavid@gmail.com. This is a part of our show. We get into the fourth and long segment. If you're a first-time listener, I'm going to say a statement, three different statements today, and I'm either going to agree and go for it on fourth and long, or disagree and punt it away. So, number one, getting into Tom Brady, and it wouldn't be an offseason without talking about whether a quarterback is elite or not. Has he moved into that elite status? Is he falling out of that elite status? Is he still elite? Is he on the decline? I mean, this is always what we talk about in the offseason, and surprisingly, maybe not surprisingly, the topic of this offseason, a lot of media outlets have made it Tom Brady. Is he still elite in the NFL? So my statement today is actually going to be that he's not, that Tom Brady is no longer a top five quarterback in the NFL. Completely punting that one away. Completely disagree. Come on. I mean, Tom Brady did not have a Tom Brady-like season last year. But have we already forgotten that 85% of his receiving options from 2012 were not there in 2013? Aaron Hernandez got arrested. Rob Gronkowski was hurt and played in a handful of games. Wes Welker left for free agency. That right there, I think, made up for 85% of the receiving options New England had in 2012. And still, New England went to the AFC Championship game. Many people have argued in recent years because the Patriots have not won a Super Bowl in 10 years now. 2004 was the last one. Lost two Super Bowls since then. Have they been an underachieving franchise? I would argue the exact opposite. Because of Tom Brady, because of Bill Belichick, this team has been able to overachieve. All those injuries they had on defense last year. I mean, Khalid Tlaib was hurt in some games and didn't finish the AFC Championship game. Gerard Mayo played in six games last year. Vince Wilfork played in four games last season. And we already mentioned the receiving options that Tom Brady had. Instead of throwing to Wes Welker, Gronkowski, and Hernandez, he had guys like Aaron Dobson, Kembrell Tompkins, and Michael Humanawahui, if that's how you say his last name, the tight end. These are the receiving options. And I forgot to mention Shane Vereen got injured in week one after having a monster game against the Buffalo Bills. He didn't return till what, like week 10 or something like that. So huge injury bug year for the Patriots on both sides of the ball. Had lost pieces to free agency and Hernandez in that special case. So that, I know that's only last year, but I would really argue over the last 5 to 6 years, if you have any other quarterback, if you have any other head coach, the Patriots would not be going to championship games and Super Bowl. So they, in many ways, are overachieving with the talent and circumstances that they have on that squad. One other thing that I do want to bring up with this discussion of if Brady is still an elite quarterback, Mike Pettine was referenced in the NFL.com article or blog about Brady and him being an elite quarterback still. And Pettine has coached against the Patriots for 5 straight years as a defensive coordinator and has coached against them 2 times every season, being a defensive coordinator for the Jets and then the Buffalo Bills last year. And of course, Pettine is going to be the head coach of the Cleveland Browns this season. He said it is ridiculous, beyond ridiculous, actually, that you would consider Tom Brady not a top five quarterback. And I agree with them. I think it is ridiculous. Is he in the top two anymore, which is where he was at the prime of his career with Peyton Manning? It was him and Manning. You could argue which one is better or was better. Maybe. That, I think that's a better discussion. Is Brady a top two quarterback or top three quarterback in the NFL? But top five? I don't know. Tweet at me. Are there five quarterbacks really better than Tom Brady that you'd rather have going into the 2014 season? Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, those are all guys. I don't know if I'd rather have them than Tom Brady, but they're in the same class as Brady. But I can't think of two more. But if you can, tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB, or send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. Next on our fourth and long segment list, we have the draft, likely leaving New York City. And, you know, the fans, I was in New York City the day before the NFL draft with Football Nation general manager Bill Enright, and we interviewed a bunch of fans, and the fans that we talked to, most of them, I'd say 90% of them, were outraged that this that the NFL would think about moving the draft out of New York. I do think partially the reason why they're moving the draft is because it's now being reported that Radio City will not be available next season because of a scheduling conflict. Now, I don't know, and I haven't done any other research, but there was nothing reported on ESPN anyway of what that scheduling conflict is. But as of right now, NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy has said that New York City, Chicago, or Los Angeles are the likely locations for the 2015 draft. If it is in New York, they'll have to look for a new location, perhaps Madison Square Garden or the Barclays Center. But again, that could be difficult for scheduling because the Rangers, Knicks, and Nets call those places home. So to hold a draft over a three-day weekend in an arena where teams are playing regularly, especially at the MSG where they play two teams play regularly, is there a weekend where both of them are on the road? I don't know. That is a good question. We'll have to see. Again, Chicago, Los Angeles are two likely alternatives for next year. Other potential cities for maybe next season or seasons in the future, drafts in the future, Dallas, Houston, Nashville, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Boston. That list is a little bit different than the list that came out at the beginning of May, around when it was reported that Radio City might not host it next year. There was a mention of Canton, Ohio, which of course is where the NFL Hall of Fame is. There's also a mention, I believe, of Orlando, around Disney World, somewhere in Florida. So there's lots of different locations being mentioned. So my statement today, other cities should have the opportunity to host the NFL draft. I'm kind of on the fence about this, but I'm going to agree and say yes, other cities should have the opportunity to host the NFL draft. It's a great money grabber for New York City. I love the tradition at Radio City Hall. If Radio City Hall was going to keep the draft, I probably would lean the other way and say it should stay in New York. It should stay where it always has been, and it's tradition. It's great. There's nothing wrong with it. Don't fix something that's not broken. But if it's not going to stay at Radio City, and MSG and Barclays is not a viable solution, then other cities should have a chance. And not just the big cities, not just Los Angeles, not just Chicago. Put it in Buffalo. You know, places that I know a bunch of fans just turned off this podcast because I said put the NFL draft in Buffalo. Look, put it in Green Bay. You know, put it in places that love football. It's nice to have it in big cities like Los Angeles and New York because there are lots of people that take vacations and go to New York City for the weekend and pay to go to the draft. Will they do that if it's in Buffalo? I don't know. I mean, very less likely anyway, I would say, for a fan to want to fly into Buffalo, drive to Buffalo, than to fly into New York City. But it really should be given an opportunity to every city. especially cities like Pittsburgh, like Boston, Nashville. I mean, these places love football as much as New York City. Arguably have as good of fans as Giants and Jet fans. Maybe even better fans, more loyal fans. I mean, that's a different debate. But it's not just New York City. You know, New York City gets all the attention because the big money. And again, that's where fans want to go. But the NFL should try and bring money and share the wealth to other smaller markets. I really believe that. And who's to say that a city like Pittsburgh, a city like Green Bay, Milwaukee, Minnesota, I'm throwing out cities that haven't even been considered, but Midwest cities, who's to say that those cities can't be as good of hosts as a city like New York or Los Angeles? I'm not saying that it shouldn't be in New York. I'm not saying it shouldn't be in Los Angeles next year. But Midwest cities, cities like Seattle in the Northwest, should be considered along with the big cities. We're actually going to add a statement into this fourth and long segment. I said we would only have three, but we're going to have four. I'm throwing in what I forgot was reported just this past weekend about Pete Carroll. He came out and, you know, when I read an article like this, I'm always wondering, why now? Why is this story out now? Who was asking him questions about this? Or was he not prompted and he came out and said something? I'd imagine that he wasn't, he was prompted to answer this question. But anyway, he was talking about the situation where he left USC. And to be honest, the University of Southern California hasn't been the same. And it's still going through a rebuilding period. What, they went through three head coaches last year or something like that? So Carroll came out and said, I'll quote him on this, "The truth was an opportunity came out and it was one that I couldn't turn away from, the opportunity of coaching in the Seattle Seahawks," is what he's referring to there. And later on he goes to say, "Had we known that that was imminent," that referring to the sanctions that USC was under for the next two seasons, "I would have never been able to leave under those circumstances. When I look back now, I would have stayed there to do what we needed to do to resolve the problem." So my statement, Pete Carroll is telling the truth and being, you know, being Pete Carroll being truthful about his statement, saying that if given another opportunity, he would have stayed at USC. Absolutely not. Look, I don't mean to call Pete Carroll a liar. I actually have learned to like the guy a little bit in the last few years with him in Seattle. Even though he is one of the oldest coaches in the NFL, I like his youthful approach to the game, and it's worked perfectly for that very young squad in Seattle with that young quarterback. I mean, I don't want to say he made Russell Wilson, but nobody else in the league thought Russell Wilson would be the quarterback that he is. And give all the credit to Carroll for finding him, drafting him, and the Seattle Seahawks coaching staff credit for developing that guy and all of that talent that they've been able to develop in a very short period to put themselves in a situation to repeat this year and win multiple Super Bowl titles in the next five seasons. That being said, I do not agree anything that Carroll has said about not leaving USC. I don't remember exactly the timing of when he left and when the sanctions were put on, but from what I remember, from what was reported back in 2010, he left because of the sanctions. He left at the same time the sanctions came out, or he left right before they came out. Do you really believe that Carroll was not leaving because he was going to have a really difficult time trying to build a winner at USC, where that squad went under a two-year bowl ban, lost 30 scholarships over 30 years, and had to vacate the 2004 national championship? Yeah, I really believe that Carroll knew that was coming. He had an opportunity to go to the NFL. He'd already been an NFL head coach, and he didn't work out for him. I'm not saying that maybe there's a chance that he still had a motivation to coach in the NFL. But to leave one of the top college programs to coach the Seattle Seahawks. You know, he wasn't going to coach the Dallas Cowboys. He wasn't going to coach the San Francisco 49ers, one of the most decorated franchises in NFL history. He was going to coach the Seattle Seahawks. Again, I don't mean to put down a Northwest, kind of Midwest attitude, small market team. I love small market teams. But I do not believe Pete Carroll left the big city of Los Angeles, the big program of USC, without knowing about the sanctions to go coach the Midwest or Northwest Seattle Seahawks. I don't buy that. He knew the sanctions were coming and he left. And 78% of the people that have voted on Sports Nation agree with me. So you can go check out that article on ESPN.com. There's also an article about it on NFL.com. And you can vote in Sports Nation's poll. Currently, 36,000 people have done that. And 78% agree with me and do not believe Pete Carroll when he said he wouldn't have left USC had he known about the sanctions. I'm pretty sure he knew about the sanctions. Our last topic here in our fourth and long segment, the Super Bowl that's coming up in 2 years will be a big 5-0, and they're going to use 5-0 as the Super Bowl logo rather than the Roman numeral L. It was reported by ESPN that the L is just not very appealing to the eye. They tried to design it many different ways using the L, and it just didn't work. So they're using a big, fat, gold-lettered 5-0. My statement, the NFL should have kept the L and kept tradition with the Roman numerals. Yeah, I'm someone that loves tradition. I'm going to miss the L. You know, the L was something I was looking forward to be honest. Ever since the XL with Super Bowl 40, that was so cool, just XL. You know, when with Super Bowl 38, Super Bowl 39, there, what is that? XXXV111. I mean, it's, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have done that, but that to me is a lot more clunky with logos, you know, with in terms of design. XXXV111, and then that to me, that is a lot more clunky. L is just plain. It's just very simple. And that's what we got with XL in Super Bowl 40. XL1 was, you know, very plain and simple. XLV, Super Bowl 45, was nice. It's a shame that they're not going to keep with the tradition and just use the L for 50. I think that is very symbolic, very, very, very appealing to the eye if they designed it the correct way. Now, to be honest, I don't like the new Super Bowl logo since, what was it? I think Super Bowl 44, Super Bowl 43 was the last unique logo. Now all they do is they put up the Roman numeral with the Vince Lombardi trophy, and then that's above the stadium that the Super Bowl is being played at. That to me is very boring. So I do not like the direction that the Super Bowl logos have gone in and do not like the way it's going now with just plain 50 with the Super Bowl trophy above the stadium that it's going to be played at. But that is still a season and a half or a year and a half away, two seasons away. This year will be Super Bowl 49, and they will be using the Roman numerals. And then again, starting with Super Bowl 51, they'll return to the Roman numerals. We'll take our last break here on this episode of Monday Morning Huddle, and then we're going to come back and wrap up today's show. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Once again, give me a tweet, DM, HOLCOMB. Send me an email, holcombmdavid at gmail.com. And if you're on Facebook, follow me on there, Dave's Football News. I want to remind you, we will have another two-week break before our next episode of Monday Morning Huddle. We'll be back on June 23rd. By that time, I will be unemployed. My part-time job at the Star Ledger does not continue through the summer, being that we cover high school sports. So by the 23rd of June, all of our end-of-the-year stories for spring sports will be over. We covered all of the softball, baseball, lacrosse finals on Saturday, June 7th. That was the final day of the season. So by the 23rd, if you care, all of my end-of-the-year stories will be up on NJ.com if you care to check them out. Anyway, let's end today's show on another article off the site. One of my favorite authors on the site, Cooper Allen, and he's doing his yearly list of NFL's top 100 players, and he is moving right along with that list. He's releasing it in five different parts. So far, two parts have been released, so players 100 through 80, or I think 100 through 81, and then 80 through 61 have been released. I think there's a really good debate you could have with quarterbacks in the list 80 through 61. Ben Roethlisberger, Tony Romo, and Philip Rivers were all in that group, and I thought the way he ranked them were very interesting. So maybe we'll have Cooper on a little bit later in the summer and talk about that along with many other things. He was a regular guest last season. So anyway, check out those two slideshows and the next group of that list, NFL Top 100 Players of 2014, will be released this week on Thursday. That would be June 12th. That does it for this episode of Monday Morning Huddle. Until 2 weeks from now, I'm going to go try and find some peace in my mind.